Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, they eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta use it only if necessary. Homie, vestige is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind of beauty of life. But when my mom said again, you could be Christ. I wasn't old enough to hold my d***ing P-right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him. Little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training in difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging, splitting duchess up, strap up. The armies of school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I'll blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals. I build with dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish gills, the cops, none. The time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holsters. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. A black gorilla, crib and blood and one only. Just know my face, I be the case for the wish at the police. Look at the name Lake, go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new Huey
Newton. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force of what we fight for. My heart goes to you, beautiful wife in war.
Enlist in war and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule is strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mitch Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it.
I'll see to that. Get him where it hurts.
Starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Revolutionary Green, free the land. Welcome to another edition of Georgia Mission Radio. I'm your host, Blue Mighty Shakir, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisons. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisons. Our third goal is to transform the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. They all be done through educational means. The fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities based to free the land, create institutions, and our programs session the education of the people. Five, prepare new African prisoners for release, reducing the African recidivism. We had totally annihilate, destroy their current way of thinking. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I go to a few events that happened in history during this week. On April the 9th, 1816, the African, Mexican, and Peace and Power Church were organized a general convention in Philadelphia. On April the 10th, Richard Adler was elected bishop. 1865, nine new African regiments of General John Hawkins division helped smash Confederate defenses at Fort Blakely, Alabama. Capture the fort led to a full off of Mississippi, a Mobile. 68 USCT had the highest number of casualties in an engagement. 1866, the Civil Rights Bill passed over the president conferred citizenship on new Africans and gave them the same right in every state and territory as to enjoy by white citizens. You know, therefore that citizenship on the 14th Amendment basically. April the 10th, 1833, Earl Aldred claimed in London as Othello. 1872, the 10th through the 14th, the National New African Convention met in New Orleans. Frederick Douglass was elected president. In 1956, four white men attacked New African singer Nat King Cole while he was performing for an all-white audience in Birmingham, Alabama. In 1947, Jackie Robinson joined the Brooklyn Dodgers and became the first New African in Major League Baseball in modern times. In 1958, W.C. Handy, composer and blues pioneer, died in New York City at the age of 84. On April 11, 1861, President Lincoln conferred with Ambrose W. Thompson about the possibility of colonizing new Africans in the area his company controlled in Panama near the border of Costa Rica. 1862, Congress ignored conservative signals from the Lincoln White House and abolished slavery in Washington, D.C. Lincoln signed the D.C. Emancipation Bill reluctantly on April 16 after holding it for several days so law slave owners could remove their slaves from Washington before the act freed them. Delphi. 1881. Spare McCollum was established in Atlanta. In 1889, Dr. Percy Julian was born. 1899, he was a scientist for over 100 patents, Benjamin Silver activist, and developed treatment for glaucoma and arthritis. Also, in 1899, whites attacked new African workers seeking jobs at Panay, Illinois mines. Six people were killed. On the date of April 12, 1787, Richard Allen and Absalom Jones organized Philadelphia's first African society, what W. Du Bois called the first wavering step of a people toward a more organized social life. In 1864, Frederick General Nathan Bedford Forrest captured Fort Pillow, Tennessee, and massacred the inhabitants. Brand new one. 1869, North Carolina legislature passed anti-Klan law. 1882, John Henry Smith named to second tour of duty as Minister to Haiti. Okay. April the 13th, 1723. Hold on. 1723. Massachusetts governor issued a proclamation on the fire which had been designedly and industrially kindled by some villainous and desperate Negroes or other desolate people as appeared by the confession on some of them. 1854, Lucius C. Laney, educator, was born. 1862, Major General David Hunter issued a proclamation freeing the slaves near Port Royal at Fort Pulaski and on Cockspur Island. 1863. Hold on. The Lincoln administration continued a colonization program by sending some 450 new Africans, about one-third of them women and children, to Isle of Vox in Haiti on the Ocean Ranger. In 1873, the Colfax Massacre occurred on Easter Sunday morning in Grand Prairie, Louisiana. More than 60 new Africans were killed. On April the 14th, 1775, Pennsylvania Society for Abolition of Slavery, pre-abolitionist group organized. In 1906, on the town square in Springfield, Missouri, a white lynch mob hangs and shoots to death Fred Coker and Horace Duncan, two new African men, before thousands of spectators. Hold up. On April 15, 1889, Oscar Philip Randolph was born in Crescent City, Alabama. 1903, 7,000 white people in Joplin, Missouri, lynched a new African man named Thomas Gilliard and attacked new African neighborhoods, burning homes, shooting new African people, and forcing every new African resident to flee the city. 1929, Oscar D. Priest was sworn in as a congressman from Chicago. He was the first new African congressman from the North and the first new African congressman since new Africans were violently driven from power in the Reconstruction period. You know, those were events that happened in history during this week. You know, we understand what more, but the show must go on. You know, first of all, thank everybody for coming to join our platform and supporting us in 2014 on the blogs of Reading, also been supporting in general. Now, also, I'd like to salute everybody for all the efforts in regards to organizing the community, building the community, and nation building. On this show tonight, I'm going to be talking to some of the elders from the West Coast or New York Revolution Nationalists. I'm going to be talking to Elder Wimbay and Elder Dottie Sierra. I see the Elder Wimbay going to open up the brother line, and I'm going to wait on the other brother to come on. So he can introduce himself. Tom O'Connor, how you doing? Tell the women your line is open. How you doing?
Okay. Hey, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
We trying to do it out here, you know? Doing best as we can under circumstances.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to introduce myself. My name is Richard Wainbay Johnson. I'm from Oakland, California, recently released from prison. I've been out a little over a couple of years after doing a quarter century, first 20 in the hole, commonly known as the SHU, Pelican Bay. And we filed a motion in the federal courts. I was one of the 12 petitioners who filed a motion, and we eventually won, which opened the gates for everybody else to come out the shoe and make it to the mainline.
Okay.
Since I've been home, I created this organization called Formerly Incarcerated Giving Back. What we do, we try to serve the community best as possible, you know, such as looking out for formerly incarcerated and the community at the same time. And we put on food drives, clothing drives, and when we have money, we give money away. And anything we can do to help the community, you know, non-profit organization. And we're in the process of trying to enlarge it, bringing more people. If anybody in the audience have any questions, just feel free to ask.
Okay. My question is, what actually, I know you said you've been incarcerated nearly a quarter of a century, right? What was the catalyst that brought you through in regards to survive your time, especially surviving time in the SHU, especially going through the hunger strikes and, you know what I'm saying, working on your case to free out the SHU and you being targeted as a political prisoner? What are some of the things that brought you through the hard times? How did you survive, per se? What was it, you know, and what was it also what the catalyst would change, also your mind state for being a criminal to a revolutionary?
Okay. First off, I realized what their main objective was to break us, you know, and breaking us, they make you become somebody less than you are. So what we did, we just we steeled ourselves to whatever was around us. You know, we didn't fall to what they were trying to do, make us turn informants. We got a thing called debriefing. Debriefing means that you submit, you give in, you tell them anything they want to know just to get out the shoe. I mean,
yeah,
that wasn't gonna happen. Period. You know, the brothers that stood up, yeah, we went through a whole lot. They tried every avenue possible to break us. You know, and the more they tried, the harder we stood. I mean, they ran the gamut on us, trying to bust us. You know, and my transformation began, like I would say, way before I went to this particular shoe. I had been in a shoe before, but this is the first time I've been in a shoe like Pelican Bay. That's totally different. I mean, that's 23 and a half hours a day, you know. I've been at cell.
Yeah.
And so all you had was your mind. That's the only thing that you had that you call your own, you know. And when you give your mind to them, you don't have nothing else, you know. And that's what we prayed on, you know, our mind. You know, we worked hard to steel ourselves against any oppression that they would come up with. I mean, they came all kind of ways, you know. They tried to break you down, you know. And you just can't give in, you know. In 09, 2009, I had a heart attack, you know. And they thought I was going to die, so they sent me out to Oregon to the hospital. I stayed in the hospital about a week, but when I was up there, I didn't know because I went under, right? And when I woke up, I was surrounded by all these different police. And the only thing they were saying, tell us what you know, when you know, and how you know it. You know, they thought I was going to die, so that's what they wanted to do. You know, try to get any information, kidding, you know, about you, or what you know. You know, and that wasn't going to happen. You know, so after that, they sent me back to the Bay after about a week. I started writing this book, you know, because I was, you know, that heart attack, I figured that's, I probably have another one, I probably die back here. So I started writing this book, but it was mainly for my son, who at the time, he was only two, when I got arrested, right? So I was going to leave him a legacy of my thoughts, you know, and give him some pointers, what he should do. It's called life lessons, right? But then as I began writing the book, I see where my son was a mirror of everybody else's son down there, you know. And so I said, well, if he can deal with it, other kids could also have learned something, not only kids, but grown-ups. So this is like, I talk about every subject you can think of. You name it, and I can talk about it. And that's what I did in the book. And that's where I would say a clear transformation started coming online, where I started putting thought into action, you know, saying that I could do this. I could get it out to the world. Because, you know, back there, people are dying, people are nutting up, going crazy. I mean, you know, you don't know from day to day, you know. Person go out and come back, and next thing you know, the police is cleaning out his cell because he died or he debriefed, you know, one or two. So, you know, so, I mean, you have to have something to lean on. And I found strength in writing. You know, I like to write. And I stayed back there, and I just started writing poems. I started writing to different news outlets, let them know what really happened back here. But a lot of people was unaware of what was really going on in them shoes. They're designed for one purpose. Now, the purpose, like I say, is to break you. You know, you have to build up some kind of resistance. If you don't, in a matter of time, you're going to buckle, you know. and becomes a guinea pig or whatever, you know, a squealer.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, so that, you know, that's what kept me going.
True indeed, you know, true indeed. You know, you made it sound very significant about the debriefing program aspect of things, right? You know, for people who don't know or understand that, you know, debriefing is a military tactic you like when they attack prisoner of war, like such like, for instance, when they went to Vietnam and they might have got a Vietnamese soldier, they try to debrief him or her to get him to tell information about something or form of attack in the water, which is where they survived, right? You know, and exactly. What's so crazy about that, why would they want somebody, you know what I'm saying, to debrief their allegiance as New York Revolutionists, as New African nationality, who they are, which is a birthright? And it's also according to our 1619 historical origin of New African people, right? You know, what's so important about you telling about the activities of New African? What's so important about that, unless you pose a threat, right? You know, I just wanted to say that because it's just so interesting that you said that, you know, and people like the Comrade Jordan said, never count on the broken men. Then you said yourself that the whole process of the shoe was to break you, to get you to surrender to them, to get you to stop being resistant, to get you to stop writing, to stop organizing, to stop struggling, to stop surviving, right? Basically for you to die, you know?
You die. A broken man, you know, and that's, they don't want soldiers back there. You know, they can deal with broken people. But they can't deal with strong soldiers back there. They can't deal with that, you know, because it shows them how weak they are. The stronger you is, it shows them just how weak they are. So they don't want that. They go out their way to make you less than who you are. You know, and I mean, the majority of them back there couldn't allow that to happen. You know, they definitely don't want you on the streets, because the majority of people back there at that time, prior to us being released, we didn't think that we was going to ever get out, you know, because they tell you die back here. You know, but when we filed that lawsuit and the government got involved, they seen what was going on back here, you know. I mean, like me, for instance, I had two life sentences for a bag of dope under three strikes, you know. They gave me a 33 to life and a 28 to life for a bag of dope. And you got dudes bringing shiploads of that stuff, get 60 days. They gave me two life sentences, you know, and $1 million bail. And how much dope was? $5,000 already bagged up. And they gave me $1 million bail and put me in the hole from day one. And not only did they put me in the hole, they sent me through the gamut of going from, not reception center, I went to death row. They just put me on death row because they said they didn't want me around other people. They didn't want me to educate other people, so they kept me away from everybody else. That's just through the process, when you first come in, you go to where they bring you in, and give you shots and all that stuff. Instead of doing all that, they put me over there on death row, going to the yard with death row, and then they eventually sent me to Pelican Bay. I hadn't done anything. All them years, I had one write-up. That was a mail violation. Why was I in a hole for them 20 years for nothing? And you had dudes that was catching cases of stabbings or whatever, right, riots or whatever, going and coming. But we was doing life in SHU until we filed that suit. We went through the hunger strikes. And but people don't know, at least 4 people died during the hunger strike. They don't talk about that. They won't say, well, one hung himself and one committed. No, regardless how his death led to it, what led to it was the conditions. They thought that they couldn't go no further, so they just, you know, then some suspect that they really hang themselves. Did they kill them? You're in the cell by yourself. At least 4 people left this earth like that, with questionable, under questionable reasons.
Wow.
It's, I mean, you know, it's, probably need to know all this, though, you know. United Nations already said anything past 15 days is true and unusual punishment. What about 40 years, 30 years in the shoe? What is that then? Beyond true and unusual punishment, you know?
Inhumane, you know?
I know.
I read some reports about that a couple of times. I read some reports that from one from his psychiatrist and one from his I think, for Samford University in regard to the right. mental health effect that the shoe does to the person after they've been released out of the shoe, and the different diagnoses and prognosis that they develop or determine or came across from after that situation in regard to the long-term effect and the way they affected brothers, you know what I'm saying, coming out of there, man, you know, which is it completely mind-altering, man, you know. Completely mind, I was really fucked up in a lot of ways, you know, that people being treated, you know what I'm saying, like animals because of their political beliefs, yeah. because their belief is contrary to what you believe in. You know, right. they believe in being free and liberated, you know, that's messed up.
Right.
That's an all-out war tactic, you know, for real.
Exactly. And part of that dehumanizing thing is that they march you around in your drawers and your t-shirts all day. I could never understand why would they march you around in a t-shirt and a pair of boxers, but you don't really have clothes. The only time you put on some clothes is like you're putting on a jumpsuit. That's if you're going outside the prison or you're going on a visit. Other than that, if you don't have thermals, you walking around in your cell in t-shirts and boxer drawers. And they're yeah. marching around a bunch of females, you know. I mean, it's very disrespectful, you know, as a man. And then when you first come in, at least in my case, they marched me down the court butt naked. So as soon as you jumped off the bus, they make you strip down and walk all the way down to the court. Then you walk in the pod butt naked. You come in. I mean, that's total to dehumanize you, right? You do with yeah. animals. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it was.
That made me think about the way they marched RNL-11 down the streets of Mississippi, you know what I'm saying, when they got them out of the house, you know. Yep. And they drawers and boxes and, you know, panties and everything, you know.
Exactly. You know, the thing that they call, I know in the Bay, Pelican Bay, they call it Pelican Bay Syndrome. Everybody have the same diagnosis. I mean, you know, all kind of the things that affect the personality. I mean, can't sleep, claustrophobia. I mean, all of this. You know, like you were saying, when you get out, you bring all them armed things with you. You just don't dismiss them. You can't leave them behind because it's part of it. It then become part of you, you know. All you got to do is deal with them now, you know. I mean, you just can't just shake them like that, you know.
True
regardless
indeed.
How long, you know, you be out.
True indeed. I wanted to ask you about your organization, right, called Formerly Incarcerated Giving Back. What inspired you, prepared you to find the organization? What were the cause behind it? What were the reasons behind it?
For me personally, all the wrong that I had done, like I was selling drugs and all this stuff, I felt the need to give back. I mean, because what they try to do, they try to make me, you know, somebody that I gave up being, you know? Like, yeah, I was out in the streets. I was doing all kind of crazy stuff, right? So when I transformed myself, I wanted to bring that transformation to the streets and give back to the people that I harmed the most, which is my people in my community. So what I'm trying to give back, I mean, you got some people that's not eating. You got some people that's unclothed, unhoused. I mean, you know, some people that need money to survive. Anything that I could do, I started doing it. And my first thing I did, in the history of the Bay Area, Oakland, San Francisco area, we gave away 300 tons of food in one day.
Nice.
Anything your car, van, truck could hold, you can take it. There wasn't no bag. You get up, get a bag. We gave so much food away. I mean, it was crazy. And we had cars parked for miles. And we would tell them, don't bring the kids, you know, empty the car, the truck, or whatever. Whatever that car or truck can hold, you can get it. Boxes. You know, and to this day, I'm still, you know, amazed. I had only been out about 4 or 5 months then. When that, you know, I think I came home in January, and no, about 6 months, because this happened in June, and it was over. I mean, people still had that food almost a year later. I mean, boxes, crates of food. Whatever your car can hold, you can take it. And we had a wide variety of all kinds of food, meat, I mean, you name it, we had food. And then on other days, like Mother's Day, Father's Day, Christmas, Thanksgiving, holidays mainly, right, Easter, we was giving away whatever that occasion was. You know, we some days we gave away clothes, some money, whatever we had. And we still, you know, we're still doing it. Besides that, I'm a columnist for the Oakland Post. It's a black newspaper. Been around since 1963. And I'm a columnist for them. And, I mean, I just been trying to be busy since I've been home. Because we got a lot of elders that's still down, you know. And we got to come out and we got to make it work. We got to make it work. And, you know, we got to inspire them as well, you know, when they come home. You know, just get busy, you know.
True indeed, true indeed. You know, before I get to the, go back to that newspaper, right, you know, and I also understand that you help, like, people get job placements, right? You know what I'm saying? What type of benefit has there been with the people in the community with your system getting jobs? What kind of results have you been getting from that, you know?
Well, so far, I mean, it's not big, but we got several people jobs. I mean, even my son, you know, he had done almost 11 years. You know, when he came home, got him a job, and he's still employed today, you know. It's a lot of people that, you know, come home and, after a while, they start reverting back to the old things that they're accustomed to doing, right? But if you can show them there's a different way, and you can provide certain services for them, they can say, "Well, hold on, I'm not going back. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna go this way." And you provide these services. I mean, if they really want it, they get on it. You know what I mean? So that's what we've been able to do. It's gonna get better because, like I said, we just been home. A couple of years, right? And it takes time. And we've been at work and quite a few other former incarcerators out here doing marvelous. I mean, doing real good things for the community. You know, employing people, showing people that there's a better way. We don't have to revert back to what we were doing, selling drugs, robbing, stealing, whatever we was doing. You know?
Trendy. Yeah, you got to have it. Got to have that mentality. You know, you mentioned about liberating. You mentioned like helping friends like the elders, right? They're still behind in the line that you left behind. How significant it is that in regards to doing that particular work? You know what I'm saying? And from your experience, what needs to happen for that work to be carried out that people can assist with?
Raising the consciousness of the people. Because people don't realize, I mean, I've been in prison before. Like back in, like in the 70s, you wasn't doing no 30, 40, 50 years, not like this, you know. It's not justice. It's injustice, you know. And they put you back in that prison and keep you there forever until you come out in the casket, you know, or you come out too frail and too old to even, you know, even think straight. That's what they want. They want you humbled and crippled, you know. And the brothers and sisters that's still in, we're working diligently to try to get them out, you know. For the ones that's out, that's a mission. We're on a mission, you know, to free the elders. Personally, for myself, if it hadn't been for the governor here, that COVID, I mean, because I had caught COVID, right, and at my age, you know, I'm not no youngster. I'll be 72 in a few weeks. He didn't want no more. They was dying right and left, especially in San Quentin. They was dying, you know. So he released, I think it was 13, 14 of us. He created this thing called medical reprieve, you know.
Yeah.
I was one of the few persons that got that. Then I heard it's been expanded over the last couple of years, but letting more people out under this thing that he created. Because, I mean, it was bad. It was bad. He was dying. You see one dude one day, and next day he dead. COVID.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
You know, you said people can spread their conscience, right? You know, if a person wanted to, what are some of the things you feel that need to be contributing in regards to like legal resources, monetary funds, researchers, what are some of the things that can assist in this that you see from your perspective, that people can get involved with?
People on the streets could contact people inside, I'm saying, because what they do, when you're locked up like that, what they do, they cut you off from society, right? They it's like, you know, that's you divide and conquer. The inside is divided from the outside. So you're left for dead. But if people can start reaching back inside to the people that's in behind the walls and see what they can, and ask them, what can I do to help you, you know? Because everybody don't need money like that, or they don't need, people need to know that they have some support, but it's emotional, whatever, you know what I mean? And people just need to just reach inside and contact some of these brothers and sisters, you know, and reestablish, you know, the foundation, because family is everything, you know, like a lot of brothers up there, they lose their whole family, you know, mother, father, all relationships cut. But if you can cut it, if you can reach in there and make connections, connect with some of these people, I mean, that does a whole lot, you know. I remember years ago, I used to write these papers, right, these colleges and stuff, and I would write a whole list of names for communication. And a lot of people would respond. That's a fading thing now. People, because, you know, a lot of you got this fear mongering going on from some quarters in the streets. Oh, they're just criminals and woo woo woo. This is what they want to project. But you have to get beyond that and get to the heart of it. The heart of it being them is people up in there, you know? Same people that used to live downfield, walk down the street that you went to school with or heard of, you know. And you need to reconnect. So, I mean, that would be my advice, you know, because I can't tell you, you know, what this person need or whatever. This person would eventually tell you. I had communication all over the world. I was writing, any time I got a chance, I would write. I made connections with a lot of people. People were writing me, you know, I mean, and that kept me going too, you know, that I wasn't totally forgotten. And that's real talk. You know, because people say, well, I don't need them. Yes, you do. First off, you need to find yourself. Yeah. And when you find yourself, share yourself with somebody else. You know, build that foundation. But they want to make you, you know, feel like you isolated, nobody, you know, care about. They want you to feel this way. And that way, you rely on them. They're going to do them a dog. You treat like a dog.
True indeed. You know, in regards to the organization formerly incarcerated, right? How can people get involved with it if they want to get, they want to donate time, resources, or energy? How can they get involved? How can they reach out to you or get involved with it or participate?
Well, we have an email. We can put it out there on the internet. Just contact us and say what you want to do, and somebody will get back at you.
Okay, do you have a website, or are you?
Yeah, we established that website.
Okay, that's good. Now, you know, soon I get the website from you, I'm gonna spread it around to my others so they can get involved in the activity, right? From your journalism work, while you're opening Post newspaper, how did that come about?
Well, I used to write for the Bayview, right? And
okay.
Like I said, I love to write, you know. Right now, I think I have a writer's block. But I was contacted from the Oakland Post by Mr. Paul Cobbs, you know, and he just told me to write. So I started writing. That's like 8 years, you know. I'd come out the shoe, and I was in New Folsom. And New Folsom, you like being in the shoe, the only difference is you come out, you got maybe 30 more extra minutes out because most of the time we're on lockdown. So he had contacted me. To this day, I'm still writing. I think he started in 2014, you know. And, I'm always trying to put some positive energy out there, you know. whatever the subject is, I'll write about it, especially if it's positive. And, you know, sometimes it's not good. You know what I mean? People don't want to hear the truth, you know. And sometimes people want the truth. So, you know, you got to be flexible in your thoughts, you know.
True indeed. You know, you mentioned the San Francisco Bay News. For the people who are listening and will be listening in the future, what exactly is San Francisco Bay News? What exactly is that? So how you say you're writing
it's
for them?
It's the truth. It's the truth. It don't shade nothing. It tells you the truth. The Bayview is a black paper that puts out the truth. You know, people want to shade it, but it's the truth. You know, you got people, a lot of people writing from the penitentiary, writing from all over the world, you know. And that paper, that's what people need to read is the truth. We've been fed so many lies through certain media outlets that, you know, a lot of us be twisted. We don't know the truth. But when you hear the truth from the truth, you have to accept the truth, you know. And that's what the Bayview does. It gives you the truth.
Indeed, true indeed. You know, I got another question for y'all. What is your name, Wimby? What does that mean? And what language is it? What does it mean?
My street name was Razor, right? When I was on the street, yeah. She called me Razor. So Wimby Kamau Kalomo. It means Razor, the quiet soldier, the unexpected. Wimby Kamau Kalomo. That's my name. But everybody just call me Wimby.
Okay, gotcha. In regard to the journalism, what are some of the things you wrote about, and how important is it for you to write about the conditions behind any line, to write about the political prison that's still there, the new African-American political prison that's still there behind any line?
Well, when I was writing for the Bayview, most of it was new African political speech, right? But when I write for the Oakland Post, it's current events, world events, or whatever, you know. And I try to give it a balance. I take a balanced approach because I know the audience. A lot of people still have to come to terms with what's really going on in prison, you know. So you don't want to shade it, but you want to tell the truth. You know, and that's what I'll be dealing with in my writings. That's a different, total different. It's a total different view from the Bayview. You know, so
okay.
You have to be flexible.
Interesting. You know, I heard about some current things going on in the Bay in regard to the reparations and things of that nature, right? And also, like I see it's a lot of gentrification going on in the Bay Area, especially in the different new African communities in Oakland and everything, right, that I've been seeing going on previously, right? In regard to brother like Sean, Jawi, rounds of making documentaries about things and the different activity going on in the tent cities and all the other stuff that's going on, right? You know, I was like, how detrimental is it for the masses not to know this information about what's going on out there, you know, and what are some of the solutions you think to the particular problems that y'all are facing out there?
When I came home, I couldn't believe it. In 95, when I left, there wasn't a whole bunch of homelessness, not like it is now. Encampments and then, like you said, gentrification, that's something brand new. I mean, areas in turn different. It's something that I've never experienced, and I wouldn't believe it if somebody would have told me until I seen it for myself. People living under the bridges, taking over parks, taking over corners, just living on the sidewalk. It's terrible, you know. And people seem like they shut their eyes to it, you know. And the drug usage, it's bad. It's really bad. If Oakland's like this, I know other parts of the country's like this. Probably even worse, you know.
So,
and the solution is we all got to band together and try to stop some of this, you know. One of the things that we do, we pass out homeless bags, you know, little tents, like toothpaste, stuff like this, stuff that they ordinarily wouldn't have, you know. So we give them that when we got it. We try to give some kind of a lot of it is a lot of mental stuff too, you know. You want to try to get them some help. A lot of them live in the streets. It's not easy living out there on the streets. You see it. People walking around talking to themselves. I mean, having days and months, and I mean, it's bad.
Yeah.
And people need to understand that they need help. You know, they need help to help themselves. And that's what we have to do. We have to band together and do what we can do.
True indeed, man. You know, it's important that we all be told to operate our own community, man. Also important that we understand our condition and see what kind of resources and strength we have in our own community to resolve our own issues without involving outside entities, right? It's very important, right? Very important that we need to pray the issue head on face first, you know. And I think of social science is to be the remedy anyway. See, all this looks in the problem to being the solution to our solution and solutionaries anyway. You know, so there's a lot of stuff going on, but that the more we think about things regarding propagation and media information, a lot of times our media propagation information be controlled by the forces that want us to continue to enslave us and oppress us. So every opportunity we get, we need to share as much information as possible so people can have, you know, their very other options to give out the situation. And there are also the solutions, right? So we need to put it out there as much as possible, control that particular narrative. So people can see that choices and plight they be going through, we're facing, so people can get the help, can get assistance, and also know that they're not alone, you know, in a lot of respects.
Exactly.
Things, right? You know, so it's a good thing if you're sharing light on these situations, you know, because we need this as much as possible. We need this, right? We need this situation.
We all
know.
It takes a tribe, for real, you know. I mean, all we got is ourselves, you know. They try to take control of the narrative. We have to create our own narrative and work from it, you know what I mean? Have to deal with it and work to achieve it, you know.
No doubt. And then, you had mentioned like the people in the drug users and the education. I was like, where have been the type of people, education level people? What type of education have you came across that would benefit to the people need right now in the current situation you face? What's something that you can tell them that are useful or helpful or beneficial to them from the education perspective?
Okay, now you'd be surprised how many talented people is up under them bridges. That have these different qualifications, but due to circumstances they can't utilize them, you know, because they don't have the resources or the know-how to reach it to people that can help them. I mean, if people can go up on these bridges and just talk to some, you got vets under there, you got educators under there, you got all kind of people, you know, that find themselves in such a situation where it seems hopeless, but if you can go down and talk to them. And uplift them, and they go back and uplift the next person and the next person. I mean, each one teach one. You know what I mean? And this is the concept that we need to employ to our people, regardless of race. But unfortunately, for us as black folks, we get the brunt of it, you know? But, I mean, we can all help each other. That's, you know. I mean, you got carpenters, you got plumbers, you got all kind of people. And I talk to people almost daily, you know, and you hear the story, you say, man, you know. And, I mean, all they need is a hand up, not a hand out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A hand up, not a hand out. And you'd be surprised, you know, what that would do to the next person and the next person.
True indeed. You know, my next question is, if you had the opportunity to talk to your younger self, what would you tell your younger self according to your experience right now, or that it would be beneficial? What would you tell your younger self?
I started smiling when you said that. I said, you idiot. I said, don't be a fool. I mean, because I was I was that guy, that idiot. I mean, if it was stupid, I would do it, whatever it was, you know. And now I look back, I said,
I'm surprised. Like I said, in a few weeks I'd be 72. And at that rate I was going, I passed 18. But fortunately, I mean, people say, you know, well, how did you, well, I like from youth prisons to the federal prisons to the state prisons, you know, I mean, I ran the gamut. And I think that helped me a whole lot, you know, in terms of taking those bad circumstances and turning them good, for the good, right? And I think that would help me, you know. And if it was a way I could reach back in my youth, I don't think I'd have done half the stuff that I did. I mean, I was off the hook, you know. Silly, stupid stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It landed me in authorities and all that kind of stuff. And eventually to state prison, federal prisons, camps, you know. But I was able to marshal through it. And today I stand a new man, you know, because I knew the mission was for them to try to break me.
Yeah.
So that, like I say, that wasn't going to happen.
When you hear the name George Jackson, what does that mean to you?
Well, I put it like this. My first ever time hearing this brother name is that I was in youth authority. And this counselor told me, said, you acting like George Jackson. Well, I didn't know who George, this is like, this had to be like 70, 71, something like that. But I from 68 to 72, I was in youth authority. And he was telling me that I was acting like him. I didn't even know, you know, what he was saying. But what he was saying is that, you know, George was a defender for those who couldn't defend themselves. And I used to, you know, if I figured that you couldn't whoop this person, I'd jump in it and, you know, I'd deal with it. If I get whooped, I get whooped. But I'm 9 times 10, I wasn't going to get whooped. You know, and he was telling me then, but that was his purview of it. But he didn't go into the military aspect or the education aspect. He was mostly talking about the physical aspect, you know, at that time, right? But then as I began to research who the brother was, yes, he was, in fact, when I went to the Adjustment Center, they put me in his cell where all this supposed to happen, the Adjustment Center in San Quentin, right? I was in cell 4, I think it was. That's the cell that all this stuff supposed to happen. They put me in that cell. And, I think about that all the time, you know. But the brother was, he was one of our best, you know. In fact, I have a picture, portrait of him in my room, you know.
True indeed, man. You know, what type of advice do you give to a young new African that want to get involved in the work that you're doing or want to get involved in the struggle in general? What kind of advice would you give him or her?
I would tell them to contact us or contact somebody who's doing the same thing that we're doing and get involved. Bring what resources you can. If it's just your body, bring that, you know. But most of us, bring your mind. Bring your mind. Throw it in the kitty. That's what you should do.
So again, I want to thank you for coming out for broadcast. Again, I want to thank you for coming out broadcast. You know, I understand, thank you for working in the past, present, and future, right? And also, at this time, can you give us your final thoughts that you want to leave us with?
Well, I'm going to use a terminology that we all use. Can't stop, won't stop. Who said, we say. That's what I have to say, you know. Can't stop, won't stop. The struggle continues. You know, regardless of your position at this moment, the struggle continues, and you can't stop and you won't stop. You know, that's onward and forward, you know. We've been down so long, we can't go no further now. We can only go up. That's, you know, we're not politicians. We're just ordinary men. And we hold our future in our hands. You know, we hold a narrative. We have to create it and promote it and do it until it's done.
So.
And with that, I appreciate you having me on the program. You know, usually I don't be on these type of programs because, you know, I'm not a vocalist, You know, I write. But I appreciate you having me on this program.
I appreciate the work you did. I appreciate what you're doing, right? It's very beneficial, man. You know, we got to always think about in regards to control the propagation, you know what I'm saying? Much as possible, because you're fighting the propagation war that we are losing, because we're going to propagate enough, but propagate, you know what I'm saying, more sufficiently or more strategically wise with our communication regarding what we do. You know, so we got to dispel all this chaos where we're presented out because a lot of people think our people know certain things because of the internet and all the other aspects, but they don't because it's so much the trick knowledge of deception on the internet aspirants that people get their hands on thinking the truth without actually talking to or having a relationship with the people that actually are involved in that thing that they're researching or even listening to or reading, you know, a spin out.
Right.
So it's always imperative for the work we're doing, especially in regards to like make connections, you know what I'm saying? If it's radio, if it's newspaper, if it's a journal, if it's a magazine, if it's TV, whatever it may be, we need to connect the outlets and be able to extend the network as much as possible, man. Make sure people are aligned and in tune. And also to keep that bridge between the brothers in the sea and the ones in the land, keep that bridge going on. So they can so we can do the work that we talked about liberating and freeing people, liberating other things of that nature, right? So that's what we need to do in general.
And
most important, you know.
Right.
So that's why I'm here doing it. I'm here doing as much as possible. You know, that's what I'm here doing this for, you know. I'm doing this for, you know, I got an announcement to make, you know, in our local cadre in Dr. John Clark Town, we retired Columbus, Georgia, where all of the people part of the independent local cadre. We're having an event April the 15th called the Reignite the Fight Community Reinvestment Summit. We'll be talking about issues in regard to why we got a community center, or why we own a community center, why we want to own different aspects in our community, such as a grocery store, community center, a bank, you know, a hospital and a school. Why you think it's necessary? Why it's necessary for us to own control of our community, own a house, own a real estate, own the property, land? Why is it necessary? How people can engage and participate in it, right? That this taking place at the embassy, which is our community center, at 2503 Dawson Street, Columbus, Georgia, 31903. You know, and it starts from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. You know, if you want to invest money, you want to invest time, resource, energy, you can do so. And also, I want to say, if anybody got any loved one, social comrade, social behind enemy line, if you're looking to our website, which is Georgia University, our website www.georgejacksonuniversity.gau.com. Again, www.georgejacksonuniversity.gau.com. And also you can find on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Georgia University. Send a message, reach out to us, or you can also email us at georgejacksonuniversity71@gmail.com. Long the resistance, long the African movement, long the guerrilla. Peace.
Exactly. Peace.
Peace.